It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. God Journey. Well, happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary?
3/19/2005, we began The God Journey.
Oh, that's that time warp coupling.
No, we began it. 5 years ago. We
just, 5 years ago. It's not the 19th, though.
We just no, it's not quite the 19th. This will air on the 14th. Close enough. This is our anniversary podcast of 5 years now.
That is wild.
Is that crazy? We just started.
How long have I known you?
Have a crazy conversation. About 10. About 10 years. About 10 years too long, maybe.
Are you wanting to be done?
I think 5 years is a good round number. We could say, hey.
Call it a gimme, a mulligan. We're just sort of, it's run its course.
Well, I'm sure everything we know is in the archive somewhere. I mean, how can you talk for 5 years?
I don't know, but you and I could probably talk for five more.
We probably could. It is amazing when you look back because we don't really, you know, we didn't really think of it as a thing we would start that would last forever. We just said, let's record some of our conversations and see what happens. So,
you know, it comes,
I've been amazed.
It just comes out of the flow of what's going on and friendship, and you don't have to schedule that. I don't know that I would put an end date or a demand on it. Must look like this.
No, and I'm pretty sure we would get together a lot less if we weren't doing this, most likely. And this kind of forces us to, oh, we got a podcast this week, so we get together.
It's the glue that keeps us together.
It is fun doing it, and we've covered a lot of ground, and gosh, we'll start our sixth season.
That is hard to imagine. I would not have listened to all those.
Yeah, we've had three different studio steps we started. We keep moving, so...
Hey, yeah, time for a new studio.
That's why it never seems old to us, because we've been in the same place for 5 years. We keep moving around.
Life has changed a lot in 5 years. Lots gone on.
It has. You're not landscaping anymore.
No, I hung up my shovel. That was nice.
But you're thinking about it again.
Oh, I sometimes dig in my own backyard.
Some days it sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
Some days it does. You know what I mean? Life is never boring. I do know that. I think I've found myself in the last few weeks talking about the dynamic of the fact that, you know what, this is an adventure. When you pack it full of a whole bunch of expectations or destinations where it's supposed to, I don't know about that because mine hasn't turned out the way I thought.
Yeah, me
either. But I like what's turning out.
I like what's turning out too.
And
it's nice to go for a walk instead of have to try and build something.
Yeah. I love being able to just embrace the adventure side of it where it's not my job to completely know, but it is my opportunity to respond.
Yeah, and see what unfolds.
Yeah, that's not as hard.
Which is, I guess, what we got to do with the Middle East this season, huh? Isn't it crazy?
It's rather crazy. I don't know.
You paid $4.50 for gas yet?
I'm sure I have. I have a teenager driving now, so I'm
that's even more gas.
I'm sure.
Well, unless it's less gas because he drives himself to school now, so you don't have to pick him up both ways. Then it could be less gas.
You know, it might be less gas, but yeah. He's social, so it's probably more gas.
It's going to be more gas on the other side of that.
But it's fun liberty for him, and he likes it.
Well, what do you make of what's going on in the Middle East? Anything?
You know, I don't know what to conclude because I'm not exactly sure what we're getting in terms of the reporting. Is like, you know, is it really people's foment saying, hey, I want to be free? Is this being engineered by folks with other interests? That's where I just end up going like, you know what? I think it's probably, yes, it's all that. And where's it going to go? I don't know. It seems as if, you know, now is the time that dictators and rulers are getting toppled, and it does seem to be this cry out of, you know, from the people saying, we don't want to be ruled that.
With each instance of the crowd beginning to say, no, I don't think so. I don't think one family gets to have all our oil money for themselves while the rest of us live in poverty, and they can connect with each other, and they can out looking scary in Libya right now because Omar decides I'm going to slaughter my whole nation if I have to hold on to power. So that's looking scary there.
Well, I think the whole thing is a powder keg. I mean, you know, I got friends in Israel that they see it much differently than what's getting reported. I mean, they feel themselves getting surrounded and set up as if, you know, this thing's going to really hit a fever pitch and then they're going to be the aggregate target. And you end up going like, is that happening? I don't know.
Yeah,
that's where I just go like, you know what? It seems as if just about all over the planet there is this surge and there's people that are saying, uh-uh, we don't want to be ruled anymore. But it's not exactly leading to liberty and freedom necessarily. It's we still got more chaos and tons of big, tough problems.
That's the harder work yet to come, obviously, to see what comes out of this and who seizes the vacuum to be a power thing. But what could be very positive about all this is these autocrats who've ruled their countries with an iron fist in the Middle East, all over the Middle East, which is why so many of their people try and immigrate to the U.S. and to Europe and other places because they're tired of living in those environments. Now they're no longer got the great Satan, the U.S. or Western society or whatever to blame. That there's the reason you're oppressed. The people are realizing, no, you're the reason we're oppressed.
Right.
So will another oppressor rise to the fore in all those? Or will people who have a love for freedom and a love for, you know, and I think that in the long run helps if people really want freedom for themselves. One of the big things you recognize is you've got to also give it to other people. And so you never know.
You know, I think one of the things that is I spent some time in Haiti many, many, many years ago and were there and was there at the time that the Duvaliers were toppled. And you saw that was a great day of freedom for that nation because they were tyrannically oppressed. But they didn't ever get a meaningful government that stepped in and helped raise the standard of living and life for the rest. I mean, it's like in that vacuum, what fills it? I love the fact that there's freedom, but there's also that sense of, gosh, folks, it has to be all hands on deck if it's going to work. If it's revolt, and then there's a question of, well, who will lead us? It's like, I don't know. Is just another tyrant going to step in, another puppet?
Well, you know, that's usually what happens. The reality, I think, with power is you hate it when you don't have it, and you love it when you do. I mean, people who get power obviously become as corrupt as the people who had power before them. And the scary thing is, who do you let take the lead? And these nations, these rebellious nations that have finally dislodged their existing government, they're going to have to be very careful about who they put in power and how they deal with power going forward. And do you invest it in a democracy of some kind so it's spread out over the populace? Or do you just get another hopefully benevolent dictator who turns out to be a power mad knucklehead?
I think that's the biggest challenge is, you know, in that vacuum, you have people who are awakening to say, hey, we don't want this. But then it's like, gosh, the huge task at hand to then how do you help orchestrate that? And I wonder at times, it's like people love freedom, but they don't always embrace the responsibility that comes with it.
Oh, I'm sure. We have that problem in our own country, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the fundamental challenge is like, yeah, freedom's this neat concept, but it does come with genuine responsibility that demands a maturity beyond your own selfish interest.
Yeah.
And whenever self-interest governs, it all devolves back into the same power broking. That's a mess.
Yeah, and the haves prevail over the have-nots.
And you just go like, that is not the way forward.
When you look at these countries and how much oil, like Libya has made, how much money they've made from oil, and how little of it they actually shared to increase the economy of their whole country, and they just spent it on their own, the leaders spent it on their own amusements and fun. It's just, and yet that's how small-minded people often are with power. I just wanted everything for myself. And I don't care about my fellow countrymen. I don't care about the person across the street. I want what's in it for me. And boy.
Well, that's inspiring. Thank you for that up note.
Well, I think that's the world's way. I'm really comfortable with the fact that's how the world thinks, lives, and operates. I just don't have to live there. And I think there are people who, when you get touched by the life and the love of God, you don't think that way anymore. It's not just about me, 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 me. It's about, wow, there's a bigger world to be shared and loved and cared about and being redemptive in the world. Because I think we all have the power. Every day we wake up, I'm going to be redemptive in the world and the relationships and the people I relate to today, or I'm going to be destructive in those things. And self-interest will lead you to be destructive. And living inside the love of God will allow you, hopefully, to be more constructive. I mean, it will if that's what you're living by. But not everyone who says they are is.
Right.
So,
you know, isn't another problem. Isn't it odd when you look at the Old Testament and the fact that, you know, Israel was always clamoring for a king and God's trying to say, I don't know, guys, that, you know.
Not even I don't know.
I just make it a little more colloquial, like it's a conversation there, as opposed to King James this.
No, I'd rather not.
But you look at God's desire to be in our lives and the kind of governing of that, the directing, the partnership in decision making, that's just totally different than a top down authoritarian structure. God doesn't even try to do that in us. And yet that's such a challenge to play beyond my own sphere. I realize it's like if I take on responsibility beyond what really is my domain, you then start to impose things on people that you may not know that are the right best things to impose.
Yeah, but people have no hesitation to impose on others what they think is best for everybody, whether it's best or not.
I know. I have a hesitation.
I do too, but look at government. Look how even our government now micromanages every little thing because somebody feels like it's in everybody's
better
best
interest. Get rid of the Happy Meal.
Yeah, get rid of the Happy Meal. You can't circumcise your kids anymore in San Francisco. I mean, they're pushing a law to do that because, you know, you can kill your baby in utero, but you can't give your boy a circumcision after he's born. That's how...
Seems a little odd.
Yeah, I get to meddle. And isn't that... To me, the nature of selfishness is I get to meddle in everyone else's happiness for my own. That's what it is. And somehow finding a way to live outside of that is...
Oh, it's freedom. That's freedom.
It is real freedom.
You know, one of the biggest joys of not pastoring, for me... is I don't end up carrying the weight of, oh, I've got to manage all these other people's lives. I don't know where I got that idea that that's pastoring.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure that it is. Pretty sure it's not.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's not.
But I think it's the inherited dynamic of feeling responsible and in charge of all these. And I'm just going like, you know what? I know how to live my life, and I know how to reach out in love and availability to others. Beyond that, I need some specific guidance if I'm supposed to do something else.
Yeah, I get the email or the question when I'm traveling around a lot. How do I get my wife, my friend, my home group, my church, how do I get so-and-so to do such-and-such?
Answer, you can't.
You can't.
You can't.
You can't. Give up. It's that I get to impose. Even when I'm, you know, most convinced I'm right, that's the time when you really don't need to impose that. Offer it. Invite people. That's very different than imposing. Imposing is the opposite way of the way God works in the world. And even if your best intention, I want my wife to get this journey. I want my husband to come out of the religious trappings. You may want is great.
Live it.
But yeah, you get to live it. You don't get to impose it.
Live it and let that be its own advertisement. If there's genuine life in what you have, I'm thinking others will find that attractive.
But we have 10,000 years of human civilizations that are all about the strong imposing their will on the weak. And the idea is to get strong, whether it's money, power, celebrity, whatever. Get power so you can have what you want and make others conform to your desires and expectations. That's the whole self-indulgent flesh way of thinking and acting without even thinking. Just the way life is. But boy, it takes a different sort of person. It takes a different sort of living to say, gee, I don't think I can impose this on you. And Jesus was probably the...
See, that's not even attractive anymore to me.
No, it isn't to me either. But Jesus was the best example of that. I didn't come to be served. Now, it could be. I'm the king. I've got all the goodies in my basket. But I didn't come to be served. I came to serve you. I came to help you. And that's very different than I want to impose my journey on you, because even the best motives of trying to get somebody to see what you see is going to make them feel manipulated. Actually, you're going to push them further away from where you want them to go. And I tell people, I used to this when I used to play golf with guys whose wives didn't really enjoy them playing golf. And so it was always,
takes too long, dude. That's where I get.
Partly takes too long, but you know, the wives just, I said, part of it's because you have a bad round of golf and you go home and gripe the rest of the day because you feel all bad you had a bad round of golf. But the important thing about manipulating your wife to play more golf is when you come home from a golf round, you are the best husband of the day. Then they're going to want, oh, you should play golf more. This is good.
You're being silly.
I'm being a little silly, but the point is, if you're on this journey of living loved, and it makes you impose your views on other people. You're
not on that journey.
Yeah. Living loved means not I'm going to get my wife to change or my spouse, but how do I live alongside my wife, my husband, and bless them and encourage their journey and not try to get them on mine. That's, if you want to make this journey attractive, don't force it on other people because you can't do it. And you'll just regret.
I don't think it's that you can't do it. I think fear, guilt, and manipulation are pretty powerful. You can get people to do stuff. All you got to do is sort of be angry enough to get your way. The reality is that's a total contradiction of what it is to be living love, being on this journey. I just end up going like, I don't understand how. I mean, this is on. You may laugh, but I think
would I laugh?
Yes, you would.
I would.
I think it's a genuine question. So I want to toss it out. I don't understand why religion ends up always sort of trying to usurp the dynamics of control so as to manipulate when that's not who we're in relationship with. God doesn't do that to us.
Religion is not about a relationship with God. That's why.
I understand, but why does, if that's who this thing is, because I don't think the planet started with, hey, let's have a religion. It started with, hey, there's God in his creation. Why does it devolve into what religion does? I'm genuinely confused as to why that happens.
Well, it would take a long time to explain it.
I know it would, but it's a good question.
Yeah, it's a great question. But I think it's just the nature of the fallen flesh. Once we fell, then it was everybody for themselves. Adam and Eve are doing it in the garden.
Is it out of fear that we try to control?
I think it's out of our own sense of unworthiness and our lack of, I think when we feel like we control our environment, we feel secure. And when we don't feel like we're in control, then we feel like everybody will just wing on us. I think we learned that in kindergarten. You either get to the top of the class or somebody's going to pick on you.
Right. Because I look at God and I look at the invitation of relationship and the lack of coercion unto that. And that's where I end up going like, that's what is drawing me, is it's the one person that's trying not to manipulate me. It seems like the most genuine relationship of interest and availability, that he isn't even guilting me when I'm not hanging out with him. He doesn't. Religion does, but he doesn't.
No, because what good is it if you're hanging out with him because you'd feel guilty if you didn't?
Yeah.
What kind of relationship
is that? I'm not sure you are hanging out with him. I think you're doing your devotion, but I don't know that it's with him.
Well, the real thing about relationship, it has to be real. It has to be free. And if you've just guilted somebody into a date night or guilted somebody into doing what makes you happy, then the doing of that thing doesn't make you as happy as you think it would. If you really care about relationship, if you just care about getting your way and being in control, then yeah, fuss, pout, manipulate, get your way, feel happy for a moment, but then it goes away. The idea of
that is loneliness.
I love someone enough to let them have their journey, to want to connect with them in real ways when it's meaningful to them, not when I need a friend and need to manipulate the whole thing, and find a way into a real relationship. People don't know how wonderful that is. If you've never had it, if you've had to manipulate everything your whole life to feel somewhat secure, then I'm just talking Greek to you, and you're like, oh, wow, boy, I don't. If I stop manipulating everything, I wouldn't get what I want. And the fact is that might be true.
See, but I think when you end up manipulating people to get what you want, unless you are totally absorbed in yourself, I think it makes the very thing you want elusive, because you don't get the joy of knowing that someone else did it with a willing heart.
Yeah.
That's why I don't think God manipulates us. I don't think he's trying. I think he is longing for that thing of, you know what? I want your worship. I want your love. I want your devotion. But I only want it if you want to give it. He wants it real. So and you can't force that.
No, that's why if you care about relationship, you end up discovering what real freedom is about and giving up control. And not trying to impose, not using your insecurities to impose someone else to do what you think is best. But that's a risk. I got an email last week from a guy who's in the middle of this journey, having been a pastor, been used to imposing his will, feeling significant, doing all the work that he's doing, and walked away from that a year ago, and ends up in this twilight zone of, man, I'm no longer the significant guy.
Right.
And yet I don't feel like life has filled that vacuum yet. So I'm kind of between, right. I'm in the hallway, hell in the hallway thing. And I just, man, my heart goes out to him on the one hand. I'm sorry you're there, but being there is better than the room you were in, the I get to control you room, and I get to be significant room. You're in a better place, even though it doesn't feel like it, because that was fun. This is painful. But you're on your way to a room, a place to live, where you don't have to impose. You'll find yourself a better lover of people, and he'll find himself a better pastor, not because he will have an institution necessarily, but because he'll become what a real pastor is. How do I care for people around me in a way that doesn't manipulate, exploit, or impose my will on them?
See, when I lost that sense of it's my job to somehow conform others, I found this amazing, unique new skill of being able to genuinely listen. Probably even found as a byproduct real conversation as opposed to one-way sermonizing.
Because now you find out what people really think, where they really struggle. And that's where a relationship happens. It doesn't happen when people, we've talked about it with Sarah, 20 years, she's trying to conform everything she says to fit what she thinks I want. And, you know, gosh, that's a great life for me. I get everything I want. But for her, it's not, and I had no idea what was going on. I mean, I'm honestly saying, what do you want to do here? And she inside, she's going, I think Wayne wants me to say this, so I'll say this. And I'm going, well, that's exactly what I'm thinking. That's great. So I'm thinking, wow, we're really clicking here.
Question, did you actually, once you noticed the difference in terms of, hey, that's what she said she was doing just because that's what she wanted versus now she's doing what she wants, it is that that's great for me? Was that really true? That it was just great for you?
Not when you find out the person on the other side of that isn't real.
Yeah.
No, that's when it's find out the whole thing goes, oh, for Pete's sake. Now, you know, it wasn't all black or white for 20 years. But for a big part of our life was Sarah fitting into everyone's expectations around her, mine included, people in the church as a quote-unquote pastor's wife, her family from growing up. And, yeah, at the end of the day, though, that's not a real person.
Right. And that's why, to me, I look at it now going like, you know what? Even if I get my way, if I don't get it because that's what people really want, it's always really frustrating because I know that's not a good outcome. If I'm imposing it on somebody else and they're sad and bummed out that that's what's going on, I've now lost something I don't know how to regain.
Even if they're pretending to go along and make it nice.
I mean, if it's not real and it's not willing, then it doesn't work for me anymore. Because I'm just going like, you know what? I suck at making people do stuff.
Sorry, Julie.
Oh, sorry.
He's lipping off.
Okay. It's not in my skill bag because it's not attractive to me. It's like, if you don't want to do it, then I'm kind of done. Yeah. It's not great for parenting, okay? Because I think there's some elements that you got to like, you know what? It's time to.
Yeah, I'm the dad after all, so we're going to have to go this way.
But even is like, you know, harping on my kids to bring in the trash cans. That's actually a challenge because I'm not really interested in harping.
And they're not really interested in trash cans. kind of leads to an impact. Where are the trash cans?
It's just easier to bring them in. But I realized, I gotta do a little better for their own development. But
yeah, the Danny Silk thing. If you don't have them off the thing by 6, you guys pay the fine to the HOA. That's what you do. They'll figure out how to get them in before 6. As long as you're paying the fine or going and getting them, they're not gonna do it. So now here's the fine. If you don't do it, I'm selling that Xbox of yours.
But I think it is so freeing when I don't have to make other people do stuff. And if I don't come at them with all their expectations of, well, I expect them to do all this, I don't find myself massively disappointed in what they're doing. I find myself available to enjoy what they're doing.
Yeah, because I think the least liked person in the room is always the control freak. It's always
and
the
they
one.
They don't know it.
Yeah, because and they're basically doing it for their own comfort because they're unsettled by whatever's going on around them, whether it's in their family or in the home group or whatever. And so why don't we all do this now? And why don't we do this now? And why don't you? And people will sometimes go along with it because, you know, at least in America, we're really good at not saying no. You know, just, oh, okay, yeah, well, we will.
But the tide of political correctness means we just all go along.
Yeah, we're just it's just, you know, it's unloving to say no instead of, you know what, I'm sorry, I really don't feel like doing that right now, and I don't know that anyone else in the room does either. But the control freaks, even if people go along with them, they get talked about later, just kind of, oh, man, isn't it so hard when they're here, and didn't it be better if they didn't come? And because it really, you don't realize when you're the person who's comfort zone is so narrow that you've always got to manipulate the circumstances around you to keep you happy. I know a woman one time, seriously, her 21-year-old daughter had 11 o'clock curfew.
What?
Yeah, in their own home. And the daughter was just rebelling in all kinds of ways. And I was talking. She was talking to us. I said, you know, I just have this curfew at 11. I said, why do you have a curfew at 11? Because I can't sleep if she's not home. Oh, so the curfew is really about you. It has nothing to do with your daughter, what she's doing. It's your yeah, I cannot sleep if she's not there. I said, well, then she needs to move out. She just needs to move out because then you don't know. You don't care. You can't. But the whole idea, my comfort is so important that I've got to make rules for other people so that I can cope and exist. And to me, honestly, what a control.
There's something wrong there.
Horribly wrong. At the end of the day, a control freak is a very terrified person. That's what they are. And so they've got to keep manipulating things so they feel like people love them. I've known people just say the most outrageous things. I almost could tell a story, but I can't identify the people involved in this.
Smart. Good job.
Smart with this.
Good job, Jacobson.
But the situation was, no, I can't go there. I can't even hypotheticalize enough to save that story. So I'm going to let it go.
I think that's the biggest trap and bummer about the fear control dynamic is because, you know what, even if you do control everyone else, you are that talked about person when you leave because nobody else enjoys that. You know, what's going on over what's going on in Libya? Well, Gaddafi goes, my people, they love me. And he's just going, no, they don't.
Somebody put drugs in the water.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. He's Al-Qaeda. And you're just going like, dude, you know, no, nobody likes being controlled.
Nobody likes the bully in the room.
And I think God knows that too. That's the thing I just don't get about some of the religious camps that turn him into that bully.
Yeah.
You just end up going, what?
Yeah.
You do not know who you're talking about. My father does not act like you're saying. And I don't care what their little Bible verses are. I'm just going like, dude, I think you're twisting that according to your perspective, that is not, God is not the controller of human beings.
Right.
I think we wish he was sometimes for our good. Not the times that it's not.
At least when he would control other people for my happiness. Yes. Absolutely. I'm on that.
Totally for that.
I'm totally.
But you look at that and it's like, no, wait, the guy that created all this doesn't even act that way. What wisdom would we think there is in doing that? If the creator of the universe is going, no, I'm not doing that. And I'm like, take a cue.
Well, that's where the whole garden image is so clear. God giving us the freedom not to follow. A man taking it. And then when they get caught, it's, I'm going to throw Eve, the only other human being on the planet, I'm going to throw her under the bus so that I can, it's a woman, you made me do it. And That whole thing of control. I remember growing up, and I've always been, whether I hate being in a poorly managed room, to be honest. When I was volunteering.
I know exactly what Wayne is meaning by that, whether that comes across or not, but that's funny.
No, when I was in volunteering at my kids' schools for various things, I get to put on various committees. I hate a meeting that somebody who didn't know how to run a meeting would take an hour and a half to do 30 minutes worth of work. So I always ended up at some point chairing the meetings in the room. And everybody loved the meetings I chaired because let's stay focused, let's get it done, let's go home, let's, and we didn't just wander off into diatribes about nothing. And so the whole thing of my life was, growing up, you want to be, if you're going to be on staff at a church, you'd really rather be the senior pastor. You'd rather be the guy, almost used the wrong word. You want to be the guy dinging on people rather than the guy getting dinged all the time. And so that's...
Okay, keep going.
No, I'm just saying, that's what we learn intuitively. Control is the greater place of freedom. But what you're saying...
It's not.
No, it is. What you're saying is God doesn't see it that way. And now I don't see it that way at all. I look back on those things, and I look back at very specific conversations I had with people because I needed them to lead a home group, or I wanted them to be an elder, or I wanted to be something. And I remember the things I was saying to people, knowing I was right and knowing what I was wanting them to do was in their best interest, but they weren't seeing it. And so there was no end of manipulation. I mean, there were places I wouldn't cross for sure, but there was a lot I would do to try and push people into the thing I knew was best for them.
Right.
All destructive.
Yeah.
All of it. Every bit of it. Look back and go, oh, quiver when I think about someone. But it was amazing how...
Well-intentioned.
How perfectly righteous you could feel doing it and even driving away
from
it.
This is for your good.
Even driving away from it knowing I got them to do it. I did. This is good. This is why I'm here.
Yeah, but I don't know where this was first said. I'm sure it was some smart person that passed it along. But if you convince someone to do something against their will, they are against it still.
Yeah.
And so the minute your pressure is gone, they're not doing it.
Or Bill Gothard's definition of leadership, to get people to do what they wouldn't otherwise freely choose to do. Is the sign of leadership.
Okay, that's not a smart person.
Oh, I remember getting that when I was my birthday. I'm going, oh yeah, that's good. Yeah, you've got to work people into a fury so they end up doing what they wouldn't otherwise freely choose to do, and then they end up living in resentment. How have I helped you?
Oh my gosh, the bar.
How have
bitterness, anger, and resentment. That's the only drink you get from controlling someone. And I tell you, they hold on to that for a long while.
Yeah.
And that's where it's like, you know what? If God doesn't treat us this way, and I mean, that's where it's like, well, does he coerce you? No. My experience with the living God is even when conviction of sin comes, God is still not coercing me into righteousness.
Yeah.
He's inviting me. And when it works in my life, it's because somehow all of a sudden I go, oh, that's better. That's more attractive. The fruit of that lasts. That brings peace and joy. I want that. And God seems to have the patience and the kindness to draw me there. And then I don't want to leave. When you're dragged there, you're leaving the first moment someone's not looking.
Yeah, unless you can become. The other side of that, whether it's around Gaddafi's regime or senior pastor, whatever, it's the people that...
That's a funny...
They're pretty close. Yeah, or Charlie Sheen, if we want to throw him in. The whole thing...
He's a warlock.
Because there's the people who are the victims of that oppression, and they have all the stuff you're talking about. But then there's also the sycophants. Who draw near the leader.
The sycophants.
Yeah, the ones who draw near the leader. Well, they get close enough to the leader that they get the benefits of the rule rather than the oppression.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah. And then that's
a
whole...
I don't like that crowd.
That's a whole different mix. You like them when you're the control guy and you need them because they're part of manipulation.
You.
Yeah, and they're the ones telling you all that you want to hear.
They're your minions.
I heard somebody say about Charlie Sheen this week, the parasites have replaced his friends.
Ooh.
I thought, wow, what a statement. What a statement. The people who just want to live off of you have replaced the people that didn't need to live off of you. They just cared about you because you were a person. Like, that's a frightful thing to say about somebody.
That's a sad reality.
It is. Because now it's people like Donald Trump will start a reality series and will make money off of your degradation into suicide. I mean, the guy's obviously going downhill in a painful wreck. And nobody's, and the people around him, fortunately, his producers had the courage to say, no more. We're not going to enable this. But other people, I'm going to go for a ride with you right now. I'll go ride as long as I'm on your good side and it benefits me. And that's the other side of that. But the need to control, I think, the need to change, the need to impose, how do I get my whatever to do whatever? All of that comes from that fearful place of flesh that we all have. And the education of growing up that says, if you don't take control of your life, someone else will. If you don't get to be the boss, then you'll have to be bossed around the rest of your life. If you don't, you know, be an entrepreneur, get your own job, be self-employed. You can work for your own thing. The whole idea is my greatest freedom comes in the greatest amount of control I can exercise.
Genuine question. You got people, I'm sure everybody has got somebody in their life that is in that control freak position. And one of my biggest difficulties is, okay, I don't want to be one of those. But what do you do when you got someone that is? And how do you deal with that when it's like the very thing that I don't want to do seems to be the only thing that I can do to get them to stop? I don't want to become like them to get them to stop.
I hear you.
What do you do?
I love just the simple honesty that says, hey, love you, care about you. I think what you're asking me to do right now, I just don't have the freedom to do.
Okay.
I confront it head on now, and I don't service it. And at the other side of that, on the one hand, you're not conforming to the expectation. And on the other side, if you really care about the person, you're wanting to connect with them in a loving way outside their need to control.
And right.
I think that's a great freedom, just to spend time, find time, do things that bless them, care about them, apart from their need to control. And hopefully they'll learn, no, I really don't need to do this. I don't. But most don't, because, again, it's a fear-based reality.
See, because I think most people get sucked into a power struggle. It's just is wounding.
It is.
And it doesn't bring freedom. So it's like one of the biggest challenges, okay, you got a control freak. Friend, family member, whatever.
Spouse.
And how do you not live under that control and yet not end up with a direct war?
Well, again, you don't have to fight. When you just say, you know what, I'm really not free to do that. No, thank you. I think that's what most people are afraid to say, particularly to a power figure. He's going to pout and be angry. I can't do anything about your response. And when I don't have to feel the obligation of dealing with your response, hey, if you're going to get mad and pout, okay, I really don't want you to. I want a better relationship than this. But this obviously has to end. If somebody doesn't take a serious attempt to change the dynamics of a relationship, that's why for so many people, particularly parents and you know, older parents or children or whatever, it's just easier. Let's just go along with
it. It's the whole fear of man thing.
It is. Instead of, no, let's be honest and loving and find a way to reconnect a new relationship.
And loving is a good underscore there.
And Sarah was, I mean, that's when Sarah went through her transition, she was all that. She was, yeah, I need to say no to this. At the same time, I want you to know I really love you and we'll get through this together. And that was all there. That helped me get through that time. But I was also very honest with her when I felt like, you know what, I don't care what the expectations or whatever. Basically, as a wife, I'm hoping this is not out of bounds now. We can work on this together. And she would go, yeah, we can. And so that speaking the truth in love, it's that great advice from Ephesians 4. That works. Speaking the truth without love doesn't work. Loving without truth doesn't work. Loving and honesty in the mix gets you to wonderful places in relationships.
So when that was going on in your guys' relationship, did you think you were doing that to her?
No.
Were you conscious of that?
No.
Okay.
In fact, I intentionally didn't want that. We were doing marriage seminars on the two becoming one, and the pastor, the husband, and not the head guy.
Wait a minute, this is not what I'm doing.
being the head in the way Ephesians 5 talks about is to serve like Jesus served, which is to give up your life on a cross for your wife. So it was, I didn't want that. We talked the opposite of that. But
okay.
Sarah thought that was her task to live.
So If you're not actively doing that, why do you think she was interpreting it that way? Is it just the baggage that we get?
Yeah, she grew up that way.
Okay. So how do you shed that?
For her?
For people, I'm thinking of everyone listening.
Well, I don't know. I don't think there's a three-step plan for anything.
Oh, darn, I was really wanting those three steps.
I know you
there.
Were. I know that's what
no,
you live
no,
by.
No, I'm not. But,
no, I know.
But I think that dynamic happens in a lot of lives because, I mean, it's just, I was listening to you, and you're just going, like, wait a minute. You're not consciously trying to control, and yet someone is feeling like, well, the dynamics are that they've got to do something.
No,
that
Sarah will say today that the control was imposed. She didn't feel like I wanted to control her. She didn't have enough self-confidence to feel like anything she thought was worthwhile. So it wasn't that she felt controlled by me. It was that she had learned to live by fitting into people's expectations around her. That was her survival mechanism. So what God won her into, and this was over a period of 3 or 4 years, people think, oh, yeah, gosh, just in an afternoon, God won this in her. The greatest lesson. The greatest lesson. We should get Sarah in here if we're going to talk about her. The greatest lesson Sarah learned through all this was she was a beloved father. She was a beloved daughter of a loving father. That's what changed her.
Mm.
And that was won over a great period of time, that she had worth and value as one of God's kids. And what she thought, what she hoped for, what she desired mattered in the world. Not the self. I mean, Sarah's not ever been the selfish, I'm going to impose my will. Never been that way. She's not that way today. But she was in a very unsafe place for her of just feeling like nothing I want or desire has worth. So I just don't bring it up. I just make everybody happy around me. And that's how I'm happy.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a control thing in the sense that I wanted to control her. Or that she wanted to be controlled. It was simply, I don't have enough worth in here to be honest with myself. And that came through to Sarah. People say, oh, well, that was a great lesson God taught her. That came through, I don't have time to go into it now, a whole series of very painful circumstances where Sarah had to stand up for what was right. Most of those had nothing to do with me, had other circumstances in her life. She had to stand up for what she knew was right when other people were telling her she was crazy. Mm. And it turned out she was right about the things that she stood up for. And to this day, Sarah is not a belligerent, selfish person who imposes her will. She's not. But neither is she a person who just goes along with everybody's expectations. And finding that way to live is just the best. It's lousy for governments. I even was sitting here talking about who's in control is the first question you answer if you're going to, quote unquote, start a group or incorporate a 501c3. What's the board structure? Who makes decision? Government wants to know who's in control. Who do we come and get if there's a problem?
Right.
And so everything about human relationships begin with who's in control. And
Jesus!
And everything about resolving the problems, and we've been through this whole court system thing, and neither one of us have. This is a great way to resolve disputes. No, it's not.
Not at all.
It's not even the people involved care about what's true or honest. It's just manipulating a system, gaming it to stay in control over the person who's trying to get control using it another way. It is an abomination, the whole system. It's the only way we humans can seemingly deal with conflict apart from, you know, otherwise the strong just beat the weak up. So that's not a great answer either. But honoring each other in love, caring about the others around you, being honest and real, not imposing your journey. Like you said, that's the only place real relationships happen. They don't happen where I get to impose my will. Or why I let others impose theirs.
You know, and it's so weird because, you know, people are like, well, don't be snared by the fear of man. And it's like, okay, so what muscle do I twitch to not have that? The only thing that displaces this is really the knowledge that you are loved. That's the only thing that I think has ever grown me out of that cowering place of the fear of others.
Yeah.
I mean, my lack of not wanting to tell someone to do something is not my fear of them. It's the total lack of joy of knowing I've imposed my will.
It's my love for them. It's my love for them that wouldn't impose it.
Yeah.
So it's not your fear. It's just I love them enough that I won't force you to do what's not in your heart to do.
And I'm okay if it's not in your heart to do it.
Yeah.
That's the real freedom is like, as opposed to, oh, you don't love me. I mean, it's like, no, this is not about me.
Even when I know you're hurting yourself and I could benefit you if you would listen.
Sure.
I still have no unction to impose it because it won't do you any good until you want it.
It will not be interpreted that way either.
until you want it, until you have a cry in your own heart. And then if you come to me saying, gosh, Wayne, can you help me get through this? Oh, my goodness. I'll help you through all kinds of stuff.
See, I think that's the long-suffering patience of God. I mean, one of the most beautiful things about the flood, and I know we're
way over time. People have missed everything.
One of the most beautiful things about that is here's everything's been going wrong, and here's God waiting and waiting until the very last moment in which he has to act so as to preserve what he's purposed to do. And I just end up going like, wow, God, you're amazing.
Yeah, the only time God seems to have to impose something is when, if I don't do it, the whole thing ends.
Yeah.
People are being destroyed. Now I've got to step in. And yeah, it's painful. Yeah, it's, but that doesn't define who he is. That's at the end of a very long, patient journey.
Yeah, and it's not an inactive God, and it's not one that is emotionally removed from it. It's just, I find great comfort in the fact that God, the creator of all this, has chosen not to be a control freak, and he could. And therefore, it's not a path of wisdom. So I don't want to either.
Thank you for traveling with us on The God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.